Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Kia ora, nau mai haere mai ki te huina o Poneki AA On Air. Welcome everyone to the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. My name is Victoria. I am an alcoholic and chairperson for today's meeting.
Hello, Victoria.
Kia ora. We open AA meetings with the Serenity Prayer, and I invite you to join me. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Excellent. So this morning we have a very rainy day in Wellington, but we have, remind me what the name of the meeting is, I've been away for a few years.
Sunday Reflections
is in the studio. So we'll kick off the meeting with the preamble, then we'll read how it works, and then we will get into the sharing for today. So I'll kick us off with the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Fantastic. And I'd like to ask James to read how it works.
James, alcoholic.
James.
Chapter 5, How It Works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are conditionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. These chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way that we used to be like what happens and what we are like now. If we have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any lengths to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these parts, we thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With the earnestness at our commands, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. This one is God's. May you have him now. Half measures avails us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We ask his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took with which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives would become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and, when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order! I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. C, that God could and would if we were sold.
Thanks, James.
So now we'll get into the... No, we won't. We won't get into the sharing portion. We will be doing the reading that the group normally does, which is from a book called Daily Reflections.
I'm Joel and I'm an alcoholic.
Get a Joel.
And the Daily Reflection for November the 16th is titled A Daily Reprieve. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. That's a quote from Alcoholics Anonymous, page 85. Maintaining my spiritual condition is like working out every day, planning for the marathon, swimming laps, jogging. It's staying in good shape spiritually, and that requires prayer and meditation. The single most important way for me to improve my conscious contact with a higher power is to pray and meditate. I am as powerless over alcohol as I am to turn back the waves of the sea. No human force had the power to overcome my alcoholism. Now I am able to breathe the air of joy, happiness, and wisdom. I have the power to love and react to events around me with the eyes of a faith in things that are not readily apparent. My daily reprieve means that no matter how difficult or painful things appear today, I can draw on the power of the program to stay liberated from my cunning, baffling, and powerful illness.
Thanks, Joel. So now we will get into the sharing portion of the meeting. So I'll ask James to share first, please.
I'm James. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, James.
I really do like that daily reflections because I feel that's something that I try to work towards, and I do relate to. You know, now I have a daily reprieve, and for me that's like a second chance. You know, like today I've got a chance to be sober and just think of today. But for me, the way that I'd be able to carry that through for just today is to try and be spiritual, and that for me is praying in the morning, and that's handing over, you know, and handing over for me is surrendering. Like, I can't do this on my own, you know. And for me, I pray on my knees because for me that feels that I am surrendering. I really could not do this on my own. I've tried to do it on my own, you know, and that eventually does turn to disaster, you know. Meditating helps where that for me keeps me able to have more of a contact with God. I've got more of a chance to pray during the day, and you know, I try to ask for like the next thought, you know, and I ask for help, and I try and say thank you during the day. I try and keep it simple, you know. You know, I'm not perfect at this. I'm not, but you know, for me, I try and be willing. Way for me for being willing is to you know, try and take action, you know, and pray God for, you know, help me to to be willing, but to like take action on things. You know, I don't want to just sit there and just pray and just think, you know, like this, I'm just going to leave it at that. I really want that, the help and guidance, and you know, because you know, without that, you know, I'm destined, I feel, to, you know, to fall down through the cracks and to drink, you know, like I that didn't work for me. You know, this is serious to me. This is a deadly disease, and this is the only way that I can really live a life. And you know, when I drank, I just had no love for myself or anyone else. I just didn't care, you know, and I hate to think that's how I lived my life. And you know, I was a binge drinker. I used to drink at the weekends, and I would just be waiting and hanging out for the end of the week to drink, and I would be very angry and blame everyone else, and you know, during the work week, and just not be very nice to be around. And so then I would, you know, be able to just drink and just to kind of, that was my release, and just to kind of just relax and just chill and just pretty much not deal with it, not deal with issues in my life, you know. And then I would just repeat again, you know. It was just a circle of doing those things, and it was eventually, after a number of years, it just got worse. And you know, and it just, I didn't treat people right. Like any partner I had, I didn't treat them right at all. Family and friends, I hardly had any. I didn't have much to do with my family, and I really just didn't like myself. But alcohol, for some reason, it just kind of let me just be in a moment of not thinking about those things and just kind of having a kind of a release. But it just, there was no growth, you know. There was no peace, really. And you know, things just got helpless, and just I think the last 8 months of my drinking, it just got, for me, that was enough to realize something wasn't right. You know, I got kicked out of flats, so I got I couldn't hold a job. I had a number of jobs, I couldn't hold them. I was in a toxic relationship with a girl that I coursed, and you know, she really acted in a way that she wouldn't normally act. You know, I really brought the worst out of her, I felt, and that's not cool. And you know, then it just got to the point my parents stopped talking to me, and it was just, for me, there was no stability. You know, there's nothing that I didn't know what to do. You know, there was no kind of like, I didn't feel safe anywhere. You know, I didn't have like a roof over my head properly, and a job, this, that, and the other. And I just knew that this was just going to get worse. So when I came into AA, I knew it was unmanageable, but I didn't completely believe it was because of alcohol. And you know, it took me a number of years to get sober, but I stayed in AA because I didn't want that pain. I knew it would get worse. I knew it would get absolutely worse. And it was pretty bad anyway when I came in. And so I just stuck at it, and I stuck at it. And eventually I got sober, and I started doing the work and doing the steps, I mean, and do what was suggested, you know, and life's just got better, you know. And the hard times I have at times, because that's life, I just find that AA just makes it that bit easier. And I've got that support, you know. I've got AA, I've got the people in AA that I can turn to, and I've learned to try to turn over to my higher power that, you know, I didn't understand for a long time. I still don't completely understand it, but what I do, the things that are suggested, like praying, this, that, and the other, that's suggested in the big book and others in AA, and it works. It just does, you know. It's just, that's my release, and not alcohol, you know, and that's where I can grow as a person and be the person I've wanted to be, you know. And I'm just grateful. I just really am. You know, I live a simple life, and you know, and that's what I want. You know, because when I came into AA, all I wanted was a life. That's all I wanted, and now I feel that I've got one. You know, so yeah. Thanks for asking me to share.
Thank you, James.
Thank you, James. So just a reminder that you're listening to Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM, and this is the AA meeting on air. So I will ask Dave to share next.
Thanks, Victoria. Hi, I'm Dave, definitely an alcoholic.
Hey, Dave.
And it's good to be at another meeting of AA. They keep me sober. Yeah, I'm just trying to think of what to say. Do I start at the beginning? So I didn't quite match up to what I wanted to be in life. I felt a little bit short, not quite meeting the bar. You know, even as a young kid, and what I did wasn't quite good enough for Dad, and all those things. And then when I joined the New Zealand Armed Forces, and great place to go for an apprenticeship to be an alcoholic, by the way, but I'm not endorsing it because then you'll wind up like me, maybe. So I joined clubs and sporting activities where alcohol was the primary occupation behind it all. There was always a part to it, and then I left the Navy, and occupations were the same after that. And I worked at the Lion Bottling Store in Auckland, and then a company called ACI Glass, which made beer bottles, and everything was around beer. There's a theme here, isn't it? And drinking, and that's what it was like. And I suffer from a mental obsession, which coupled with a physical allergy. And the mental obsession is that all I do is think about drinking and how I was going to get it. And rightly or wrongly, I'm half Scottish, so I always used to think about it and how I get it for free. That's the easiest way. Yeah. So lots of employers probably... when I left them, their office barber went down and things like that. Anyway, Joel earlier was in the reading was talking about a daily reprieve, and I really needed that because on a daily basis I would muck up, you know, in life, whether it was with family, friends, my own standards, whatever. And I just wouldn't achieve. And that took me down a road where the only time I ever felt right was when I had a drink in my hand. And I had to rely on that to be able to function and do my job and things like that. And I can remember an occasion falling down some marble stairs with my briefcase and my suit. You know, the big office guy, you know. And out into the crowd that are going for the train, everyone's rushing past, and there's my kids looking at me from the sport pack van, and how small I felt because my briefcase was over the pavement and trying to pick up. Here's their dad, drunk as a skunk at 5 o'clock on a Thursday afternoon, and. Needless to say, it took many events like that before I realised the depths I'd sunk to. And it's after involving the police a couple of times, maybe it was four times actually to be exact, and waking up and realising, you know, looking in the mirror and realising I'd turned into my father, that I was exactly the same as my dad was. So is this disease a genetic thing? I don't know, and it doesn't matter. And that I'm going back to what I was saying at the beginning. Is it because I didn't feel right as a young fella, or I didn't meet up to standards that were expected of me? All of that, it actually doesn't really matter, because it was alcohol that took me to the place I was, and AA took me out of that. And AA is the only thing that I found worked for a drunk like me. And I came and I stayed. I didn't even do things very well. I do like the bit in the reading where it says we are not saints, We don't have to do this program perfectly, but it still works, even if you don't. I'm not endorsing not to do it either. Well, it makes it a harder road, but it's good to listen to suggestions of what we call old-timers, people that have been there and done that and found stuff that works. And so what's been said today, the one thing I didn't like about AA, there are stuff I'm allowed to not like in life, and the one thing I didn't like about AA when I came there, they had God up on the wall. And God to me meant, I grew up as a Catholic and in a very religious family. AA is not a religious organisation. I can have any spirituality I like. I actually like the sea, and that means a lot to us. So a natural kind of a setup is my kind of God. I go down to the beach and contemplate things when I'm struggling quite a lot. Anyway, I stayed and I listened, and probably the most important thing is I really wanted what these guys had, because they were laughing about the things that were driving me crazy, you know, the problems that I had and the things that I had and the things I was losing. At that stage, I lost my family. And I was fortunate enough in AA to get that back, actually. So that's you know, that's one of the greatest things I've got. Life cruises on, and life throws problems at you. And AA's given me lots of tools that I never knew as a young fella how to deal with issues. I never intuitively knew how to resolve issues, or even how to talk to ladies, or how to behave properly, or what was right or wrong. And I've gained a lot of that through AA. And my life keep getting better. And I've been sober a few decades now, and looking back, it still gets better. Hey, and I can mess up, and I do. It's I'm only human, and I can mess up. But today I have a reprieve on a daily basis, and I've learnt one thing, which is really hard for me, because I'm a bit of a control freak, and I like to be in charge. And you know, whether that's something to do with my upbringing or whatever, again, that's another excuse. I don't need to be that person. And I know that I can get by in life without being that person. And I get a daily reprieve from the issues that I had yesterday. I just need to focus about today. And today the first thing I focus about is not picking up a drink. And I've got a 99% chance of it being a good day beyond that. The only time that day gets marked up is when I put my aura into it and start to try and control things. A few of the other things that we deal with is for drunks like me and alcoholic like me is resentments. My head just races. It just goes round and round and round. And I know that I cannot live with that. I need to take care of it. And handing, as has been said, handing things over to my higher power and leaving things to be as they will be is probably the best thing I've ever learnt to do. And and then I don't worry about it. It's amazing. So life's got easier and life's got better. I suppose that's the most prominent thing. And the thing that I like the most about it is I actually have, that day I looked in the mirror and I saw my father, the image of him in me and the things I'd done. I lost complete respect of myself, and that's probably what drove me to AA and made me stay. And today I've gained some respect for myself. And I have a belief that I can do things and I can get by I've lived through sicknesses, I've lived through loss of parents and adversity at times financially, and I know I can handle it. AA's given me the skills to do a lot of that and not worry so much. Because when I worry and start contemplating and reminiscing, I wind up going a little bit crazy, and after that, It's a very short distance to picking up a drink. And I know that because I go to meetings and I hear what other people say when they slip. And that's the last thing I need in my life. So I'm a very grateful member of AA, very grateful that for the friendships and fellowship that I found there. It is an anomaly in life. Something for free is given away. And that's how it was given to me. And that's what I try and practice these days. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Dave. Just a reminder, you're listening to Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM, and this is the Wellington AA meeting on air. If you or someone you know can relate to the sharing today and wants some help, you can contact us on 0800 AA Works. That's 0800 229 675. Or the easiest thing to do is probably to go to the website alcoholicsanonymous.org.nz. There you can find the 0800 number if you can't memorize it. You can find a meetings list, so you can just put wherever you are in the country and all the meetings will come up. And you can also find this show recorded as a podcast along with other podcasts. You can also go to the Wellington Access Radio website, and this show and other previous shows will also be there as podcasts. Okay, and I will now ask Joel to share.
Thank you, Victoria. I'm Joel, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Joel.
And this is great service, doing this meeting on air, and it's great that members of our home group can attend this meeting and keep it going. It's a great way to spread the message. Step 11 is probably my favourite step, and the one that I forgot about for a long time as well. If I look back at the 12 steps, I see that the first three steps are about surrender and acceptance and restoring faith or finding faith to help with the journey ahead of recovery. And the fourth and fifth steps is like the digging deep. You know, it's the beginning of the action steps and turning the spotlight on myself and digging the dirt on myself finding out what made me like I was. And then I think there's a brief pause there with steps six and seven. There's a pause where we admit our defects of character. We ask God to remove the defects of character that we've just gone through in our fourth step. And step six, humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings, sort of segues our way into step eight and nine, which is making restitution for people we'd hurt and harmed. And, they're not easy steps by any stretch. They're very hard. You know, it's about getting honest, and being honest is not easy. You know, it's something we can't hide from. We can't hide in our lies. Hard, but successful if it's done the right way. And so the last three steps are the maintenance steps, and I think that's what was mentioned in the reading about a daily reprieve. It does say daily, and like I've heard even in this meeting this morning, you know, in this modern age, it's just sometimes impossible to do things daily. I do shift work, and this whole week I've had to set my alarm for 3:20 in the morning. You know, am I going to set it for 3:10 in the morning so I can do my prayers and readings? No, I'm not. You know, I've got to look after myself. I've got to look after my mental health. And God doesn't mind that. You know, He's not going to say, oh, you're going to drink today because you didn't do your prayers. You know, it was suggested. So even waking up and acknowledging that I don't have time to do it, and I wished I did, is fine enough, you know, and then I'll do my prayers on the hoof on my way to work or, you know, something like that. But the important one for me is, I'd like to touch on, is the meditation. And I was really rigorous on meditation in my early weeks and months of recovery. It was my watershed moment. I discovered that I could tap into my higher power through this practice of meditation. And I heard later on, the simple quote was, prayer is listening, is talking to God. Prayer is talking to God, and meditation is listening to God. And I've had a rough year with my parents both being in hospital twice in a row, and, you know, being in hospital. I've had insomnia for years, and it's gotten worse. And so I had to seek support to help me through that because I had no family to help me with it. Well, my sister anyway. Anyhow, I seen the support worker, and we were touching on meditation. Do you meditate? I said, yeah, I don't have time. Yeah, I'm too busy. I can't. You know, the usual story. And she encouraged me to pursue it again, and I did. And it's sort of grown over the past couple of months because even a doctor suggested it as well. Meditation will you know, it's good. It clears the mind. It relaxes you. It preps you for sleep, that kind of thing. So in today's modern age, we're very lucky to have, you know, phones with apps, and we can download these free meditation apps. And that's what I've done. And it challenges you. It sets a goal for you. Like it said, would you like to meditate consecutively for 30 days, 60 or 90? So I did the small stuff, which was quite big. I thought I'd do the 30. Well, I'm on consecutive day number 35. And all I have to do, I can choose my own times. It doesn't have to be 45 minutes or an hour. It doesn't have to be 20. I've set it for 10 minutes. And I ensure that sometime during my day, no excuses, I will sit down, put my earbuds in, and listen to a meditation. And I tell you what, it has really, really paid off a lot. So, yeah, I even find my mood is more level. I'm not so titchy. I'm not anxious. I work in quite a stressful job. I'm out on the road every day. And I just seem to be a lot more grounded. So the support worker said, when I was exploring meditation again, she said, how's the meditation going? This is a few months back. I said, yeah, I've been doing it for a couple of days, you know, it's still quite busy and it works. And then, if, you know, I don't get time to find it. She says, look, meditation's like anything in life. She says, it's a muscle that needs to be flexed. You need to do it every day. You need to do it every day to get the true benefits of what it is and what it gives. And so I listened to that and put it into practice. And I hope that I continue to do it. It's written in the steps for a reason, because it works. It's a suggestion, and it jolly well works. So I'm pleased that I've started that again. And, I love my home group. It's on Sunday, 6 o'clock. I grew up in Miramar in Wellington, and I'm now living in Miramar. I work in Miramar. My parents live in Miramar. And I can see the meeting house where we have our meeting up on the hill. And I look out. It reminds me of a reflection, daily reflection, actually, about a guy who looks out his window and he can see the community rooms where he has his meeting down on the flats there up from the hill. Life at the moment is one neat package. It's going very well. So I think I'll land there, and thank you for listening to me. Thanks.
Thanks, Joel. Just a reminder, you're listening to Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM, and this is the Wellington AA On Air. I believe we still have a Facebook page. The others will be checking that regularly. Sometimes it's nice to get messages from people all over the world who listen to the show. So that's just Wellington AA Meeting On Air on Facebook. I don't have access to that, but it's a great, great place to go. Okay, I will share briefly just to take us home, and then we'll close up the meeting with the promises. I think it's the ninth step promises, but we call them the promises, and the serenity prayer. Okay, kia ora, I'm Victoria. I'm an alcoholic.
Kia ora, Victoria.
Hi guys, it's good to be back. I've been in Scotland for 2 years, so it's been a while since I've been in the AA On Air room, and it just makes me so grateful that I know so many great people, and I've had the opportunity to do service over the years, and I have something to come back to, because during my drinking, I would move around or kind of be very transient between places, people, things. And I never felt like I was ever coming home to anything, which is a bit sad because I had a loving family, but it never really felt like home because I just wasn't engaging with it. You know, I just wasn't rooting myself in anything. I wasn't connecting with anyone. And so nowhere really felt like coming back to something. So having the experience of actually coming home and coming back to something and having built things here and having connections with people, it's just a really amazing experience to have in recovery. So the reading today is about that daily reprieve. And when I was drinking, what I had was a daily Groundhog Day. You know, it's just the same thing. And I woke up every morning saying, you know, I never thought I had a connection with God, but I used to pray every day. I used to pray, God, please let today be different. But I already knew deep down with this sinking feeling that it was going to be exactly the same as yesterday, you know, which was just throwing up, like just, oh, so sick. Throwing up until I saw bile and then trying to get alcohol and then trying to hold off on drinking until a civilized time with civilized people, always breaking that, getting blackout drunk and then just repeating it every single day. And it's funny, you know, you don't have to be a daily drinker to come here. And I didn't think I was a daily drinker, but once I kind of sobered up and had a bit of clarity and a bit of reflection and started remembering things, I realized I was, at the end, I was drinking every day because I would engineer my life so that I could drink every day, but have it be acceptable, you know, like finding different people to drink with or only drinking after midday or only drinking in the evenings or only drinking in social situations. You know, I'd always find a way to make it acceptable to myself because I certainly wasn't acceptable to anyone else by the end. And my life was so small as well. It was just this little triangle between where I lived, where I got money, and where I got alcohol. And I didn't go outside of that. So I was just in this little kind of triangle-shaped box, triangle box. So it was just, I laugh because it's just tragic, you know, it's just, it's not funny, it's awful. But I'm sure, you know, some people listening can relate. And then I came in because there was really nowhere else to go. And I, you know, heard suggestions like the 11th step. And I went, well, I am vomiting every day and I want to die. What is meditation going to do for me, right? Like, what has that got to do with anything? And by coming back and listening to people, it was made clear to me and I started to understand that things like meditation and doing the dishes and putting out the chairs and doing the daily reflection are the stepping stones to a life where you don't vomit every day and you don't want to die. And from there, I was able to start taking on suggestions and start doing the steps. And the steps are in order for a reason, you know, like the 11th step came at step 11. You know, they didn't say, oh, you need to do this, you know, these 86 through 88, you know, they didn't kind of say, oh, you absolutely must jump into that right now. Although I know people who have, and that's really worked for them. I think that might've been a bit much for me. I'm quite grateful that the steps are in order. I, you know, really needed to get down step one first, of just understanding that I was an alcoholic and that my life was unmanageable because then everything followed on from that. And yeah, a daily reprieve if I do the work, you know, I have to be doing the work. And I'm grateful that I relapsed when I was 3 years sober because it taught me that it's really simple logic, but I didn't grasp it, which is that if you do stuff that works, it'll work for you. And if you stop doing the things that work, it'll probably stop working. And for some reason, I thought I could kind of propel myself out into the ocean, turn the motor off and be completely fine, you know, and I wouldn't get start taking water on board and drown. But unfortunately, that's exactly what happened. I stopped. Someone spoke today about resentments. In the big book, they don't really say this is definitely going to happen very often, but I'm pretty sure at some point they say that, you know, if you hold on to resentments, you probably will drink. And I got a resentment and, you know, stopped going to my home group as often and then stopped going to meetings as often and then stopped meditating and then stopped praying and it all kind of fell apart. But I'm really grateful for that experience because it means that now I understand I need to do these things on a daily basis if I want a daily reprieve. And I'm also grateful for it because it makes me relatable to other people. You know, now I've had, you know, we work with others as part of this program, so I sponsor women now. And, you know, sometimes I take on sponsees who come to me specifically because I have relapsed. So I can't ever be down on myself or hard on myself or stink about relapsing because it was a very important part of my story. I have over 5 years sober, by the way. So, you know, things, you can come back from relapse. And I always say to people, just come back, you know. And it was a real God job for me because I had the key to a meeting. And so I said to myself, okay, well, you can mess up. That's not the words I used, but you can, we're on radio, but you can mess up your own life, but you're not allowed to mess up other people's sobriety. And so I turned up to a meeting immediately after I had a drink, so and came straight back in. So that was really good. And, you know, I've heard today some really great stuff about what we can live through and what we can, I don't just think live through, I think probably thrive through sometimes, you know, and find joy in and learn from. And, you know, we heard about growth as well. You know, the woman who raised me died a couple of months ago. Unfortunately, I was overseas when it happened and I never thought of drinking, which is a miracle. Like, wow, that's amazing, you know. And when I came in, I had this, you know, I always talk about it as being this back door of things we tell ourselves, okay, I'm not going to drink. However, if this happens, then I'm allowed to drink, you know, like this kind of get out of jail free policy, which wouldn't be getting out of jail free because then the phenomenon of craving would kick off and you'd be back at square one and it would just be awful, right? But my thing was, you know, if my parents or, you know, grandparent in this case ever died, then that would be my get out of jail free. And then it happened and I didn't think of drinking. And that's amazing, you know, just by doing the work, the desire to drink has been removed, and I'm forever grateful for that. And I was just able to think about how much I valued the time I spent with her in recovery. So after I got sober, I spent a lot of time with her, and I was able to really appreciate that. And I was also able to think about how proud she would be of me. And that's not me not being humble or kind of bigging myself up, but just I am a person now that my family can be proud of. You know, I'm not a little sewer rat anymore. So I'm, yeah, really happy about that. And at this stage, I'm rambling a little. So I think I'll just finish the share there. Thank you, guys. And who would like to read the promises from page 83 to 84 of the big book?
I'm Dave, definitely an alcoholic and slow at finding the page in the big book. These are the promises, and I can guarantee this will happen in the program. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we'll be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. We'll comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realise that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialise if we work for them.
Thank you, Dave. And I will just shout out the meeting. So is it Miramar Reflections?
Yes, Sunday Reflections, Miramar.
Sunday Reflections, Miramar, 6 p.m. Sunday. What's the address?
At the Community Rooms, Chelsea Street, Miramar.
If we work for them.
Thank you, Dave. And I will just shout out the meeting. So is it Miramar Reflections?
Yes, Sunday Reflections, Miramar.
Sunday Reflections, Miramar, 6 p.m. Sunday. What's the address?
At the Community Rooms, Chelsea Street, Miramar.
Community Rooms, Chelsea Street, Miramar. There you go. So once again, you know, the all-knowing, all-seeing website is probably the best place to go. But yeah, Sunday, 6 p.m. And if you're not in Wellington, maybe you should make a visit.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.